Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning, it's 11:05 Eastern Time. My name is Angel Ball, and we are broadcasting the show that focuses on the public solutions to gun violence, victims to Victoria's. Today's show is called, What If Santa Delivered a Solution to Gun Violence? Follow me on Twitter at On Air Angel. And of course, we're using the Black Talk Radio Network, founded by Scotty B. And this is a non-profit radio network. Go to the Black Talk Radio Network and click on the donation button. $24 gets you an annual subscription. Again, the title of today's show is, What if Santa Delivered a Solution to Gun Violence? Last week, we reviewed several shows, including shows that looked at children who are overrepresented in gun violence. One of the things I'm going to do today, going to take a quick review for some of the public health policies, because I'm asking for a solution. We are asking for a solution. If you are in our broadcast area, look up your local congressman or local senator and ask them what can be done. Let them know, for instance, Ron Portman here in Ohio, where we're broadcasting from, let him know that you're fed up with these numbers and what policy changes can be enacted. And that's one of the preventions we will revisit later. Public health solutions, for those of you who are listening for the first time, are based on the fact that disease can be prevented in populations, be it infectious disease or chronic disease. And for many epidemiologists, the gun violence that occurs in the United States of America specifically is actually preventable by using public health models. Now, one of the ways of preventing is when epidemiologists study how diseases are transmitted, they have to identify the people who are at risk, the people who experience the health event more than others. And if you've been following us throughout the year, that would be African American males in urban areas. African American males in urban areas represent 51% of all homicide victims in the United States of America. And most of the killings are done with a handgun, not a long gun. So what we're going to do today is review some of the preventions and hope that the idea of the show, because it's the Christmas season, is that a solution can be delivered. So how can a solution be delivered? For one thing, the grassroots organizations need to understand that violence is predictable in populations. Truly random actually means equal probability of all or none and all the permutations in between. And that's if you understand research. But if you don't understand research and you haven't gotten to that level of education, you need to understand one of the basic tenets of public health, and that all disease events are predictable. So cancer is predictable. Broken legs are predictable, and gunshot wounds are predictable. In other words, If you've ever been to the emergency room, the emergency room keeps data, and they know that a huge group of people who come in with a complaint are going to come in with a complaint based on previous complaints. So car accidents are how people present in emergency rooms. And of course, to keep tight, to keep connected to our theme, gunshot wounds are very often presented in the emergency room. And they are very expensive to treat. And later on, I might go back and look at some of the data on how expensive gun violence is to treat. And one of the things I want to do is to take a look, since we broadcast in the Midwest, at the number of people close by and in other areas that are hit by gun violence, or Black American people are overrepresented in these statistics. Here, where we're broadcasting in Cleveland, Ohio, so far there have been 97 shootings in Cleveland, Ohio. 97 shootings in Cleveland, Ohio. Close by, about 350 miles away or so, in Chicago, there have been 474 homicides. And the details, they're not all gunshot wounds, but when you're dealing with African-American males, most of the wounds will be gunshot wounds, and most of the victims will have known their perpetrators as an acquaintance or a relative. I'm going to give those statistics again so people can see the magnitude. So in the Cleveland, Ohio area where this show originates, there have been 97 homicides in Cleveland as of, I believe the data was actually the end of November. In Chicago, there have been 474 homicides. And actually in Chicago, that's down 60. But if you compare Cleveland and Chicago, you're looking to see that roughly five times as many people are victims of homicide in Chicago than in Cleveland, Ohio. And this data from Chicago comes from the Chicago Tribune. And if you're online, you can follow me by typing in Chicago 474 homicides, and that will take you directly to this article. And there is a map, too. Most of the victims have been shot on the south and west sides of Chicago. And, of course, if you've been following us, the breakdown here is most are Black men. And this actually lists, the Chicago Tribune article lists a few of the names and circumstances. One of the things I noticed in looking at the data for Chicago, there are quite a few victims who remain unnamed even when the coroner has ruled on their death as being a homicide. So I'm going to go through the names of some of these people so that we get an idea of the human factor. And then we, of course, are going to go into some of the preventions. The Chicago Tribune article also lists the age, and I'll let you know if the age of the victim is in or out of the pattern. There's an unidentified male on November 30th who was shot. November 29th, Charles J. Moore, 24-year-old male. Louise Ms. Carey, 50-year-old male on November 29th. D'Angelo D. Smith, November 28th. These are all victims of homicide in Chicago. The Chicago Tribune keeps a running record. If you click into the article, you can also see the locations, which are mostly on the south and west side, but the map, of course, gives you more detail. Terrence J. Brooks, 32 years old. Ivan Coates, 21 years old. Ruth George, 19-year-old, female. That's an outlier. Rayvon Hutchins, 20-year-old male. Nakia A. Smith, 17-year-old male. Zebulun R. Wright, 39-year-old male. Chris Fox, 29-year-old male. Keishianta R. Coleman, forgive me if you're a relative and I'm mispronouncing the name. You can call in 704-802-5056. Tell me about your loved one and how to pronounce the name correctly. Guillermo Lerma, 17-year-old male, Christopher Terrell Willis, 32-year-old male, Frank Corona, 22-year-old male, Richard L. Buick, 30-year-old male, Raul Aguayo, Edgar Guevara, a 20-year-old male. We're seeing some surnames that are probably Latino. Reynaldo Sanchez, 28-year-old male. And I'm not sure if the data separates them out because Puerto Rican people can be African American, Dominican, and Cuban people can be black, I should say. Because if you are Cuban or Puerto Rican, that's actually your ethnicity and your nationality. And race, ethnicity, and nationality are not all the same. I'm going to look at a few more giving honor to those who've gone on to glory. Corbin K. Jones, 21-year-old male. Kimberly Underwood, 50-year-old female. Stoney Bridges, 26-year-old female. Those are some of the victims in Chicago, the 474 homicide victims. If you want advocacy, form a grassroots organization. Cure Violence does exist in Chicago, but Cure Violence does not exist here in Cleveland, Ohio, where we're broadcasting from. And it's a grassroots organization, I broadcast about it before, where they actually interrupt violent acts that may occur. It's 11:15 a.m. if you just joined us. If you have a comment about today's show, call 704-802-5056 and listen to the prompts about muting your phone call. Now, the Children's Defense Fund has a website where the title of the nonprofit is shortened to childrensdefense.org. And they work to demand elected officials protect children, not guns, by advocating for common sense gun safety. So look up the name of your senator in your broadcast area. All public officials now have a Dropbox of sorts where you can write a comment and send it to them directly. Even if you don't have your own email, they very often have a drop-down box for contacting. One of the senators here in Ohio is Ronald Portman. So here tonight, are some ways gun violence can be reined in, reduced, simply by improving policies. This particular part of the broadcast, I'm focusing on children because it's Christmas. Implement universal background checks. I'm reading from childrensdefense.org. Current federal law does not require background checks for gun sales at gun shows on the internet or between private individuals. If you've been following my show this year, some states do, like Washington, D.C., and don't call and tell me D.C. is not a state, but the District of Columbia does enforce their own law that requires gun background checks for private sales. Background checks do not provide legal gun purchases, but they could prevent child and teen gun deaths. So in other words, it would keep children from getting guns that are illegal, traded without a record of purchase, reduce straw buying, the chain of custody for straw buyers. We must extend background check requirements to cover all gun sales, according to the childrensdefense.org. Prohibit firearm access for high-risk groups. Again, reading, we must keep guns out of the hands of those who would use them to harm children, families, and communities. And in the previous show about domestic violence, we discussed how having a gun in the home it increases the risk of all residents of the home being shot, even if the major dispute is between the two conjugal partners. People convicted of domestic abuse or other violent crimes should have restricted gun access. Enact Child Access Prevention Law. Child and teen gun deaths are preventable, and child access prevention laws can reduce accidental shootings of children by as much as 23%. We must require that guns be stored safely so children and teens cannot access them unsupervised. And of course, a large amount of teenage homicides are committed by teenagers who have access to guns that are in the home. So we have discussed previously gun locks, cabinet locks, not storing the ammunition and the gun in the same place. Those are some preventable things to help teenagers. And most, first of all, gunshot wounds to the head during a suicide are most likely to be committed by a male, and he's most likely to put the gun underneath his chin or to the temple, and those gunshot wounds are fatal at least 95% of the time. Going on to the next recommendation from the childrensdefense.org, require child safety features for every gun. It is outrageous that the Consumer Product Safety Commission can regulate the sale and manufacture of teddy bears and toy guns, but not real guns. We must subject all guns to safety regulations, including child-proof safety and child lock requirements. Another recommendation from the childrensdefense.org website, ban military-style weapons, and they have no place in our community, the recommendations say. We must ban assault weapons, high-capacity ammunition magazines, bump stocks, and other devices which allow shooters to increase the rate of fire in semi-automatic weapons. And we did several shows this past year where we discussed the banning of the weapons and the ammunition that go along with it. The last recommendation from this page is fund gun violence prevention research. Now, in previous discussions, we discussed the Dickey Amendment, which bans federally supported research on gun violence and its causes, but it's not as widespread as people think. It's not a true prohibition, but it has been hard to circumvent. So again, the last one is fund gun violence prevention research, and to tackle gun violence as an epidemic in America, citizens need information, not guns. And at the top of the show, I was explaining some of the public health policies surrounding prevention of disease that are applicable to prevention of gun violence. So let's review what an epidemic is. So an epidemic actually means that there has been an outbreak of a disease. There's another word in epidemiology called endemic. And endemic means a certain amount of the disease that is on a level that we can all tolerate or that the society or region is used to. So what constitutes an epidemic is that the endemic disease begins to spike and begin to get new cases, which is called prevalence. And so when new cases come along, epidemiologists want to say, why is this occurring? So certainly in Chicago, the idea that there would be more homicide victims than days of the year by the end of November is indicative of an epidemic. And all of you who are on social media, all of you who keep up to date on the news, see that Chicago is struggling with this. And they're not using enough prevention to reduce the numbers. So one of the risk factors of gun violence is poverty, and that would be a socioeconomic factor. Another risk factor of gun violence is actually being in an urban area. And we've mentioned in the past, the way that urban area looks is also a factor for gun violence. When your neighborhood is blighted, the crime is more likely to be increased because there are places where clandestine activities can go. And then just the overall feeling of my neighborhood is, I live in the hood, my neighborhood is ghetto, there are abandoned buildings. People don't spend as much time outside socially, believe it or not. That's also a proven factor in gun violence. We have about seven more minutes before the station ID, and we will have time for a call. 704-802-5056, 702-8056. So there are individual risk factors for someone committing violence or being a victim of violence. History of violent victimization, attention deficit hyperactivity or learning disorders, history of early aggressive behavior, those are some of them. There are other risks that I mentioned that are in the society, the urban area, poverty, access to guns, and going back to the individual risk factors, the inability to solve interpersonal conflicts without knowing how to de-escalate a situation. Certainly, the violence we see with policemen who choose to shoot and not de-escalate, that fits in that category. So gun violence, according to the American Psychological Association, is an urgent, complex, multifaceted problem. It requires evidence-based, multifaceted solutions. Psychology can make important contributions to policies that prevent gun violence. And again, the title of today's show is What if Santa Were to Deliver Us a Gun Violence Solution for Christmas? So there are antecedents to gun violence. I'm reading from the Gun Violence Prediction, Prevention, and Policy article found at the American Psychological Association website. So a complex and variable constellation of risk and protective factors makes persons more or less likely to use a firearm against themselves or others. For this reason, there is no single profile that can reliably predict who will use a gun in a violent act. Instead, gun violence is associated with a confluence of individual, family, school, peer, community, and sociocultural risk factors that interact over time during childhood and adolescence. Prevention efforts guided by research on developmental risk can reduce the likelihood that firearms will be introduced into community and family conflicts or criminal activity. Prevention efforts can also reduce the relatively rare occasions when severe mental illness contributes to homicide or the more common circumstances when depression or other mental illnesses contribute to suicide. Gun violence prediction and prevention at the individual level. So that's, I'm reading, there's a lot here from the article, and I want to extrapolate it a little bit. So when they say multifaceted, that's what I want grassroots people who have been victimized to understand. And what the researchers mean here is that once you identify all the risk factors of people, groups, and areas, you use things in a combination to bring those risk factors down. Now, in a real world, I would ask for an immunization for society to be inoculated against gun violence. And that's my using my imagination, but that's also my using today's theme, what if gun violence could be eliminated and be delivered as a package from Santa. But also, I'm also using that analogy because in the past, we have seen huge diseases eradicated from the society. If you're older than I, the grandparents might have had siblings who died from infectious disease. If your great-grandparents are alive and you are my age or younger, your great-grandparents might remember something like the Spanish influenza. So vaccines have become the norm so that society has what is called herd immunity. And in herd immunity, a certain group of people, I have to check for each vaccine, but between 85 and 90% of everyone, once he or she has received the vaccine, then there's less likely to be an epidemic. So how do we vaccinate our society against gun violence? What are some of the risk factors? The American Psychological Association mentioned mental illness when it comes to suicide. And I also mentioned shows that we've done in the past where we took a look at blighting of neighborhoods, access to guns, and not being able to resolve interpersonal violence. What does work for gun violence prediction and prevention on the individual level is identifying people who are suffering from a mental illness. That should be a priority. This way an intervention can be done so that he or she has psychological help, counseling help, and in states that do the background check that attach to a psychological profile, then psychologically impaired people are not allowed to get access to guns. So we've heard stories of the mass shooters where they should have been prevented from getting a gun, but the background check did not reveal their psychological deficit. It's about, yes. Okay. I'm hearing something, I'm not sure what it is, but it's almost 11:30, so let's do our station ID, Scotty, and we'll be back on the other side of the station ID.
The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Thank you, Scotty, for that station identification. If you just tuned in, it's 11:31 a.m. I am Angel Fall, broadcasting on the Black Talk Radio Network, which is nonprofit, and we can use your support. A $24 donation gets you a subscription for the year. You can follow me on Twitter, On Air Angel. You can follow Black Talk Radio on Twitter. And also, if you are listening and you're really wondering who's out there trying to gather the data so that we know how to stop gun violence and who's out there actually working hard to create programs that reduce the morbidity and mortality in gun violence across the United States. So we have been talking about Chicago. And Chicago, as of the publication in the Chicago Tribune that's most recent, has had 474 homicides this year. 474. And we began by looking at some of the names of the victims and some of the ages of the victims. At the beginning of the show, there was a 50-year-old homicide victim, and I am not negating his death, but he is outside of the normal pattern. He is a lot older than the pattern says, or the risk factors indicate for who is most at risk for gun violence. So I mentioned earlier something called Cure Violence, which was founded by epidemiologist Gary Slutkin, who is on Twitter, and he is ranked one of the top, his 10 NGOs by NGO Advisor in 2020, his organization. And an NGO is a non-government organization. And Dr. Gary Slutkin founded Cure Violence in Chicago in the year 2000. So he has a public health approach to prevention. And he has done, and we covered some of those shows, the program has been established in other cities. I want to get a little bit of the background of the program. And if you are listening in your city, has been barraged with African-American male homicides due to gunshot wounds, contact Gary Slutkin and see if you can start a cure violence program in your neighborhood so that we have a prevention piece that can be delivered next year. A little bit background on the program, reading from Wikipedia. Originally developed under the name of Ceasefire in 2000, Slutkin launched the model in West Garfield, the most violent community in Chicago at the time. And at the top of the show, I mentioned that the gunshot wound victims were in the South Side and the West Side of Chicago. Ceasefire produced a 67% reduction in shootings in its first year. However, a three-year review by the U.S. Department of Justice in 2009 found that it reduced shootings from 16% to 34% and eliminated retaliatory murders resulting from an increased use of public education slogans such as "Don't Shoot, I Want to Grow Up," and conflict mediation and community mobilization. And I have been referring to conflict mediation as interpersonal conflict resolution. Those words are similar. Returning to the article about Ceasefire, Ceasefire received additional funding from the state of Illinois in 2004 to immediately expand from 5 to 15 communities and from 20 to 80 outreach workers. That year, homicides in Chicago declined by 25%, a total of 448 at a rate of 15.5 homicides per 100,000 residents. Ceasefire was reorganized and changed its name to Cure Violence in September of 2012. And you can find them on Facebook and Twitter using the words Cure Violence. Cure Violence now refers to the larger organization and overall health approach, while local program partners, sites often operate other names. Ceasefire Illinois now operates the Chicago program sites using the Cure Violence model. And to get back to that model, I was also using the beginning of the show to reintroduce users to public health. Some of you may be hearing me use the language for the first time, but all of you who wash your hands, for instance, after you go to the bathroom or are practicing a public health model, all of you who get a flu shot are practicing a public health model. Returning to the Wikipedia article, Ceasefire Illinois now operates the Chicago program site using the Cure Violence model. In December 2015, Cure Violence has 23 cities implementing the Cure Violence approach in over 50 sites in the U.S. international program partner sites such as Trinidad, Honduras, Mexico, South Africa, Canada, and Colombia. So here's a little bit more about the model. Now, at the top of this article, I mentioned that Gary Slutkin is an epidemiologist with an MD degree. This means that he is a medical doctor who knows how to cure diseases in populations. Everyone who works as an epidemiologist is not a medical doctor. That's for the listeners. Here's his analogy. Slutkin says that violence directly mimics infections like tuberculosis and AIDS. Thus, the treatment ought to follow the regimen applied to these diseases. And that is exactly what I said at the top of the show. If you believe, and we can prove, violence is an epidemic, because it's not normal to have more than a person killed every day, for instance, in the city of Chicago. The endemic numbers should be way, way smaller. So an epidemic suggests very strongly through the data collected that something is occurring in the society, because this is a societal problem, where the disease, in this case gun violence, is occurring more and more. There's more prevalence. Going back to the article, Cure Violence approaches violence in an entirely new way as a contagious disease that can be stopped using the same health strategies employed to fight epidemics. So if you have had success as a client of Cure Violence, if you are organizing your own program to honor a loved one and reduce the gunshot wounds, morbidity, and mortality that occur in your neighborhood, I'd like to hear from you. Call 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. The Cure Violence model trains and deploys outreach workers and violence interrupters to mitigate conflict on the street before it turns violent. Be violent. These interrupters are credible messengers, trusted members of the community served, who use their street credibility to model and teach community members better ways of communicating with each other and how to resolve conflicts peacefully. Stepping away from the article, it is important when you are doing outreach. And just like Dr. Slutkin, I used to do HIV/AIDS outreach. And one of the interesting things about outreach is when the outreach workers match the ilk or demographic of the clients, the adherence to the policy changes, the adherence to the behaviors or the compliance is greater than when they don't match. So what does that mean? Black and brown outreach workers in neighborhoods of black and brown people are simply better received. That's something to think about. Gender violence follows a three-pronged health approach to violence prevention: detection, interruption of planned violent activity, behavior change of high-risk individuals, and changing community norms. Members of the organization insert themselves into the communities affected and work to stop retribution from occurring or violence being created due to lack of communication and tense situations. One volunteer was interviewed for a BBC article and stated she diffused situations by arranging funerals, bringing food, talking to, and distracting the loss due to the leaders, bringing in community leaders, and stepping in at hospitals and rental complexes. So that is the policy as covered by Wikipedia and as started by Dr. Slutkin. Now, policies like this and programs like this need to be evaluated so that they can get funding. So if you are a grassroots member and you really want to start gun violence eradication in your neighborhood, it's important for you to understand how funding works from the Centers for Disease Control, for instance, or from the Department of Justice, which actually houses the FBI. The Department of Justice money, unfortunately, a lot of the money after the Tamir Rice shooting went to large urban cities to fund police hirings. Many of the victims of these crimes did not have organizations in place that could ask for the funding and create what's called an IRB. Again, if you have a comment, we have 20 minutes to go. I'd like to hear from you, 704-802-5056. So the programs have been evaluated to see how effective they are. So here's one evaluation of a Cure Violence program. In an independent evaluation of the Cure Violence model, at the Baltimore Partner Program site commissioned by the Centers for Disease Control. And I just mentioned them. They do provide funding because they monitor disease in the United States of America, and it's their policy position that violence is a disease. So this evaluation was conducted by Johns Hopkins University. It's called Baltimore Safe Seat Program, Safe Streets Program, the Cure Violence Partner site. Remember we said that many of the cities renamed their actual site program, but they're using the model of Cure Violence. And the Baltimore program is credited with reducing shootings and killings by up to 34 to 56%. Community norm changes occurred even with non-clients, and reduction spread to surrounding communities. Daniel Webster, co-director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research, advocates for such an interventionist approach to violent crime, believing the benefits of ceasefires intercessions are many. On CNN.com, Webster said, "Violence is reciprocal. Stopping one homicide through mediation should buy you peace for months down the road." U.S. Department of Justice Bureau of Justice Assistance contracted with the Center for Court Innovations to evaluate the Cure Violence New York City program partner site and found that gun violence rates in the program site to be 20% lower than it would have been had it changed mirrored the average change in comparison precincts. I mean, that's a bit of a critique, but again, you're seeing really interesting numbers. 20%, 54%, this translates to someone being alive versus someone being dead. This translates to someone not being injured, someone who's not paralyzed, someone who does not end up on kidney dialysis because a bullet pierced their kidneys. John Jay College, which is in New York, was contracted by several funders to conduct an extensive independent evaluation in the cure violence approach in New York City, which found a reduction in violence, a shift in norms, and improvement in police-community relations. The evaluation found a 37 to 50% reduction in gun injuries in the two communities examined. Additionally, the study found a 14% reduction in attitudes supporting violence and an increased confidence in police and an increased willingness to contact the police. In 2015, a report found that the average homicide rate in New York City program neighborhoods, so let me just step away from the article here, it was not citywide. It's in certain boroughs of New York. And you have to remember, Manhattan has boroughs. And what people on the East Coast call Manhattan is what people outside of New York simply call New York. But New York has boroughs, which are subdivisions of the larger city. A 2015 report found that the average homicide rate in the New York City program neighborhoods fell by 18%, while increasing an average 69% in comparison neighborhoods. So those are neighborhoods that are adjacent to the program sites. And if you want to know more about ceasefire, there's an interesting movie called The Interrupters. It came out in 2011, and it documents the story of three ceasefire outreach workers. Okay, so there is a movie called The Interrupters that you can also look. We are trying to solve gun violence by using preventions that are available. The title of today's show is What is Santa Word to Deliver a Gun Violence Solution? And I have been discussing the solutions. And of course, when you discuss the solutions using the public health models, you have to understand what public health models are. So the movie details the outreach workers. And I explain the outreach workers already have street creds sometimes. Of course they do. The outreach workers are invested in their community in the Cure Violence program. So a little bit more about the movie for those of you who might just want to look at it. You're not very savvy about doing research. And you actually want to see the faces of the people who have done the violence interrupters. And that's why the movie is called The Interrupters with an S. Came out in 2011, produced by Cart McKinn Films. And it tells the story of three violence interrupters who try to protect their Chicago community from the violence they once employed. So they also do use reform gangbangers. It examines the years in Chicago, which drew national headlines for violence and murder that plagued the city. It's directed by Steve James. So see if you can get it if you've got Redbox. Another good source for finding movies is the library. Now, if your library doesn't have it on the shelf, most libraries have the ability to order the movie for you. The violence interrupters who are showcased in the movie are Amina Matthews, Kobe Williams, and Eddie Bocanegra, and they look back on their past experience with street violence to try to steer young men and women in the right direction. And Matthews was the daughter of former Chicago gang leader Jeff Fort, and she comes to the aid of the mother of Darian Albert, a Chicago high school student whose death made national headlines when it was captured on videotape. So look for The Interrupters on DVD. And the founder of Cure Violence, Gary Slutkin, is also featured in the movie. So it is 11:48 a.m. Eastern Time. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Victims to Victorious on the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Angel Fall, and the title of today's show has been What's What if Santa were to bring a solution for gun violence this year? I'm paraphrasing a little bit. So the solutions for gun violence come in the prevention. Preventing it then reduces the number of people who are victimized. And any solution to gun violence in the United States has to be multifaceted. We need to look at the public health model and what it offers. It offers identifying people who are at risk. And in the case of cure violence, it involves interrupting the violence. In order to interrupt the violence, the outreach workers can de-escalate potentially violent situations. Now, in the pieces that I was reading, they mentioned about cure violence, the retribution killings. So in other words, when you're dealing with gangbangers and they want their own justice, they are going to hit the other people, shoot the other opposing side based on who they believe committed the crime in the first place. And so what the violence interrupters do is they know the players and they appeal to them, if you will, to not get the retribution. The article on cure violence also mentioned one of the outreach workers, I believe it was Amina Matthews, doing something about funerals. And if for those of you who are familiar with gun violence, very often the funeral triggers additional violence. And sometimes violence interrupts at the funeral. And then sometimes the bereaved want justice. So these are some of the factors. So if you really want to get funding for your program, you need to be able to write a grant so that you can get money from the Department of Justice, the Centers for Disease Control, for instance. In your own local area, you may be able to get funding from your county or city as a nonprofit. Very important to get your organization nonprofit status, 501c3. And speaking of nonprofit status, if you are listening to Black Talk Radio, the Black Talk Radio Network, we can use your support. Go to the Black Talk Radio Network button, donation button, and give. And you can subscribe for $24. We have less than 10 minutes to go. And I want to expand on some of the other preventions that I mentioned that were posted by the Children's Defense .org organization. And one of the ways that they believe policies can prevent gun violence, of course, is to change the Dickey Amendment, which bans federally supported research on gun violence and its causes. And there are some loopholes here. Clearly, Cure Violence got funding because their program looks at the behaviors of individuals and the way communities are marred by this violence and establishes community norms that no longer accept the violence. So researchers like Dr. Gary Slutkin are now able to circumvent the Dickey Amendment. And if you attach yourself to the Cure Violence program, if you contact them, they can help you. They can help you use the models, okay? Using the models, and those are public health models. Now, another prevention I want to amplify is the implementing of the universal background check. Because current federal law doesn't require background checks for gun sales and gun shows, this means that the straw buyer situation puts more guns on the street and more guns in the hands of people who could not pass the background check. That's very important. So the idea here is that the background checks are tightened up and they are required between individual sales and at gun shows, fewer guns would get in the hands of people who know they cannot get access legally. Now, prohibiting firearm access for high groups. In a previous show, we looked at the few states, I believe there are about 13 states, that will actually go, and once you have a domestic violence charge, they will ask you to relinquish your guns. There may be two states that will actually come into your house and remove the guns, and My recollection tells you there's one state where the only gun they will remove is the one that the victim reports having been threatened with. So people convicted of domestic abuse or other violent crimes should have restricted gun access, the childrensdefense.org says. And if more states, if you live in a state where a charge, a domestic violence charge or conviction does still allow a person to own a weapon, that might be something you write your local congressman about. That might be something that you contact the mayor about. And you have to work on legislation. This is why policy is so important. Policy that becomes law can be enforced by the law. And in law enforcement can help. It's one of the organizations, ironically, because they carry weapons, but law enforcement can help reduce gun violence when these policies are in place. I personally would like to see all 50 states have a rule where you have a domestic violence charge where your weapons are surrendered voluntarily. You have a certain amount of time where they're surrendered voluntarily. And then after that, I personally would like to see the U.S. Marshals come and get it. And I know that the NRA and other gun enthusiasts don't like that. But this way we would know there was a way to enforce it so that women who are in homes with domestic violence and guns present are 13 times as likely to be shot by that weapon. So this would greatly reduce gun violence. And, of course, most domestic violence victims are actually female. This is where you have more female victims that are in the count. Another prevention that I wish to amplify is to enact child access prevention laws. Now, there is some talk about prosecuting people who don't store the guns outside of a child's reach. And the American Pediatric Society, if I'm saying that right, they have a whole article on the amount of guns, the amount of hand pressure that can be used to discharge a weapon. So this is one of the arguments for the trigger locks, because, first of all, the same child who can pull the trigger will not be able to pull the trigger, and some adults and teens won't be able to pull the trigger, obviously, if the gun has a lock on it. And, of course, this article doesn't mention it, but when we talk about solving gun violence, having the micro-stamping on the bullets, California is now requiring it, and the last time I looked, they were still the only state. So why is that important? At the beginning of the show, I named a person in Chicago who was found dead but unidentified. Now, most of these homicides, believe it or not, I'm not going to say most. Yes, I am. Most of these homicides would be more solvable if the bullet had a micro stamping, because then it could be immediately you could immediately walk it back to the origin of the gun. That's where I'm going with it. And then they could find out where the gun came from. Now, how it will affect straw buyers is interesting and yet to be seen. But these are all ways of reducing gun violence in our society. And that's what I was hoping for Christmas. It is a hard way to go. It's a multifaceted solution to a multifaceted problem. But if we target the population at risk, which is what epidemiology is about, and that's mostly African-American males in large urban areas, we should see results, and we should see results like cure violence, where the reduction of gunshot wounds and homicides goes down greatly, whether it's their own data that says 30% to 50% or independent data that says 20%, that translates to the lives of people. People who are living because they haven't been shot, people who are healthy because they haven't been shot, and people who have thought about getting retribution, who've thought about using a gun to solve or threaten a problem, may not choose to do that anymore. So that's actually all the information I have for today's show. I just want to remind you that I am on Twitter, and that is @OnAirAngel. Cure Violence is also on Twitter. And I want to thank those of you who have been listening all through the year. My name is Angel Fall. This is Victims to Victories on the Black Talk Radio Network.